Hey everyone, welcome back. You guys have been sending in some really thought-provoking stuff about affordable housing.
Yeah, definitely a hot topic right now.
Absolutely. And one of the things you sent over really caught my eye. It was that YouTube video about Spain's rental market.
Oh, yeah, that one was fascinating.
Really makes you think about how government policies can have, well, sometimes unexpected consequences.
It does. It's a presentation by José Manuel Pérez Ríos, an architect. He uses this thing, a causal diagram, to break down what happens when the government tries to, like, directly control rental prices.
A causal diagram, so kind of like a flow chart.
Sort of, but it dives deeper into cause and effect. He's using some pretty cool ideas from cybernetics and dynamic complexity to show how policies can sometimes backfire.
Cybernetics. Okay, so we're talking about systems and feedback loops, right? Like how things adjust in response to changes.
Exactly. Think of it like a thermostat. It's constantly adjusting to keep the temperature stable.
So is he saying that trying to make housing more affordable could actually make it less affordable in the long run?
That's the gist of it, yeah.
Yeah.
And the diagram he's created is a visual way to see those chain reactions, how messing with one part of the system can create ripples in all these other areas.
Okay, I'm officially intrigued. Let's dig into this diagram. What's the first domino to fall when the government tries to control rental prices? Where does it all start to unravel?
Well, he starts with this thing called the construction sector loop. Basically, if rental prices are kept artificially low, it can actually discourage new construction.
So landlords aren't as motivated to build new apartments or fix up existing ones if they can't charge as much rent.
Right. And when fewer new units are being built, the overall supply of housing shrinks.
But the demand, I'm guessing, doesn't really go away.
Nope. And when you have high demand but low supply, basic economics tells us that prices go up.
So the very policy that's meant to make housing more affordable ends up pushing prices higher. It's a kind of counterproductive loop.
Exactly. And that brings us to the next loop, the public sector loop.
All right, so how does the government get tangled up in this whole mess?
Well, think about it. Less construction means less revenue for the government, right? Less money from property taxes, from building permits, everything.
And when the government has less money, that probably limits their ability to invest in things like affordable housing programs, right?
Precisely. So, on the one hand, private developers are building less because of those price controls. And on the other hand, the government has less money to pick up the slack. It's a double whammy.
This just keeps getting more complicated. And then there's that neighborhood quality loop he talks about. I'm curious about that one.
So with this one, we're looking at the connection between reduced public funds and, well, the quality of neighborhoods. Less money means fewer resources for things like urban renewal projects or even just basic upkeep of public spaces and buildings.
So if a neighborhood isn't being maintained, it becomes less desirable, which probably makes developers even less likely to want to build there.
You got it. And so this loop kind of reinforces that downward spiral, fewer resources, lower quality, and ultimately less affordable housing.
Wow. It's like every loop just makes the problem worse. And we haven't even talked about the potential for, shall we say, creative workarounds.
The shadow economy loop, right? This is where things get a bit, well, interesting.
I bet. Because when you try to artificially suppress prices, people will always find a way to get around the rules.
Human nature at its finest. In this case, you might see landlords demanding under-the-table payments to compensate for those lower legal rents.
So instead of making things more transparent and fair, you're basically fueling a black market for housing.
And it undermines trust between landlords and tenants, which just makes the whole situation even more complicated.
This is a pretty bleak picture so far. Construction slows down, neighborhoods decline, we've got a black market brewing. What's next? Landlords just giving up altogether.
Funny you should ask. The last loop is called the property sales loop, and it's pretty much what you just described.
Okay, let's hear it. What happens when landlords just can't make the numbers work?
Well, they might decide to cut their losses and sell their properties. It just becomes too risky, too much of a hassle to stay in the rental market with all these constraints.
And when those properties are sold, they might be converted to something else entirely, like condos, or just bought by people who plan to live there themselves. Either way, they're gone from the rental market.
Exactly. And that just further reduces the supply of available rentals, pushing prices even higher, and reinforcing the very problem the initial policy was trying to solve.
It's a bit dizzying, isn't it? We started with this seemingly simple solution, rent control. and ended up with this cascade of unintended consequences that could actually make the whole housing situation even worse.
It really highlights the importance of understanding complexity. Tackling housing affordability isn't about quick fixes. It's about looking at the whole system and understanding how all the pieces fit together.
It's like a giant puzzle, and we can't just focus on one piece in isolation. So where do we go from here? What are some of the alternative solutions that might actually work?
That's a great question, and it's exactly what we'll be exploring next. So we've seen that just trying to control prices directly can really backfire. What does Perez Rios suggest instead?
Yeah, like, if that's not the answer, what is?
Well, he argues that we need to shift our thinking, move away from simple solutions, and embrace a more nuanced perspective.
Okay, I'm all for nuance, but what does that actually look like when we're talking about something as complex as housing affordability?
For starters, it means recognizing that there's no single magic bullet. We need a multi-pronged approach that tackles those root causes, not just the symptom.
Right. Like we saw with that causal diagram, everything's connected. So we can't just tweak one thing and expect everything else to fall into place. What are some of the key elements of that multi-pronged approach?
One of the biggest pieces of the puzzle is increasing the supply of affordable housing.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, if there just aren't enough places for people to live, demand is always going to outstrip supply, and prices are going to keep going up.
Exactly. It's basic economics. So instead of trying to control prices, we need to focus on creating more housing options.
So how do we do that? Where do we even start?
There are a lot of different ways to approach it. We could incentivize developers to build more affordable units by, say, offering tax breaks or streamlining the permitting process.
Oh, yeah, that permitting process. I've heard it can be a real nightmare.
It can be a huge roadblock. So if we can make it easier and faster to get affordable housing projects off the ground, that would be a big win.
Definitely. What else? What about those other innovative housing models Perez Rios mentions?
Right, those are really promising. Things like co-housing, where residents share some common spaces and resources, or community land trusts, where the land is owned collectively. These can offer more affordable and sustainable options.
Yeah, I've actually seen some really cool co-housing projects popping up. It seems like they're creating this great sense of community while also addressing the affordability issue.
Exactly. And it's not just about building new units. It's also about thinking creatively about how we use existing spaces. For example, maybe we could convert some of those vacant office buildings in downtown areas into affordable housing.
Oh, that's a great idea. Especially with so many people working remotely these days, it's like turning lemons into lemonade, right?
Exactly. It's about being resourceful, adapting to changing circumstances. But ultimately, it requires a shift in mindset. We need to move away from this idea that housing is just a commodity, a way to make a profit, and start thinking about it as a fundamental human right.
Love that. It's about ensuring everyone has access to safe, affordable, and decent housing, regardless of their income level. It's about creating a more just and equitable society.
Absolutely. And that brings us back to the importance of understanding those interconnected systems. Housing affordability is intertwined with so many other issues. Social justice, environmental sustainability, community well-being, it's all connected.
So it sounds like Perez Rios is advocating for a much more holistic approach, one that really considers those long-term impacts. He's given us a lot to chew on thinking about these issues globally. But how do we take all of this and apply it locally?
Great question. That's what we're going to explore in part three of our deep dive, taking those global insights and figuring out how to make them work in our own communities.
So we've been talking about Spain using their housing market as a case study to, you know, wrap our heads around this whole affordability puzzle. But now I want to bring it home. How can our listeners take these ideas from Perez Rios and apply them to their own communities?
It's a great question. The principles we've been talking about, they're kind of universal, you know, but the solutions, they're going to look different depending on where you live.
So it's like we've got this toolkit, all these potential solutions, but we need to figure out which tools are the right ones for the job.
Exactly. And the first step is, like, diagnosing the problem, right?
Yeah.
What are the main drivers of housing costs in your area?
Right. So it's almost like playing detective. We need to understand those root causes before we can start brainstorming solutions.
I like that analogy. Is it a lack of land? Zoning laws? Maybe it's a huge influx of new residents. You got to figure out what's going on in your own backyard.
Okay, so let's say I've done my detective work, and I've figured out that the main issue in my town is a lack of new construction. There's a demand for housing, but developers just aren't building. What do I do with that information?
Well, the next step is to dig even deeper. Okay, so we know there's not enough construction.
Yeah.
Why is that? Are there, like, regulatory hurdles? Is it too expensive to build? Maybe there aren't any incentives for developers to prioritize affordable housing.
So once I've identified those roadblocks, what then? What can I actually do to make a difference?
That's when you start advocating for change. You can contact your local representatives, go to city council meetings. Maybe there's a community group that's already working on housing issues. Get involved.
It's about taking that knowledge and turning it into action.
Exactly. And remember, you're not alone in this. Talk to your neighbors, your friends, your family. The more people who are aware of the issue, the more likely we are to see real change happen.
It's about building a movement, right? A collective push for a more just and equitable housing system. And those movements, they always start at the local level.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
So we've given you the framework, the tools to start understanding this really complex issue. Now it's time to take those tools and use them. Dive deep into your local housing market. Who knows? You might be the spark that ignites real change in your community.
This has been an amazing deep dive, and we want to thank you, our listeners, for being a part of it. Keep those questions coming and keep diving deep with us. Until next time.